This is second stage. We've got the list of subcommittee members on the screen, but I want to run through and see who's here. Isaac Vandenberg, I think, might be joining us a little bit later. Isaac, you're on. Okay, how about John Sims? Andrew Guy? Great, thanks, Andrew. Senator Quick Bishop? Okay, Duff Mitchell? Garrett Boyle?
Garrett.
Thanks, Garrett. Karen, are you on from AEA, Karen Bell?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, thanks. And then see our Michael Baker team. Michael, Mark, Karen.
Present. And then we also had Neek Barat and Lauren Colhane also joining us.
Perfect. All right. And then thanks to everybody, any others who are on as observers or subject matter experts or interested parties. So we'll go ahead and get started. And again, thanks for joining us. I guess, Michael, anything you wanted to say before we launch, jump in?
Just kind of overall kind of administrative, you know, Michael Baker, we're here to support this subcommittee. You know, the next task force meeting, it's our hope to have all the subcommittees kind of present a high level outline of kind of the actions and priority recommendations that they're considering. They don't have to be finalized by any means, but it's enough to have that discussion with the task force and to kind of present out on progress so far. So we'll be kind of behind the scenes helping advance. And, Neil, if you don't mind, I just wanted to show quickly just the action kind of worksheet that we developed, and we'll introduce this later on in the meeting. But we created this, and it's hosted right now on the Task Force SharePoint site, and I can quickly show you where that is. But there's a tab specific for the subcommittee. Every subcommittee has a tab, and it's essentially the same information where this will kind of feed into the larger plan. But, you know, that what these blue columns, there's six of them, is what we're kind of focused on right now. And it's a simply, you know, action name, kind of the what action, you know, name and action we're pursuing, the description, 100 words or less, implementation timeline, immediate, short, medium, or long-term, lead organization that would be in charge of that action, any partners and collaborators, and then the status, if this is a kind of a new action identified for the state, if it's building on an ongoing effort, or if it's something that's identified and later we kind of want to withdraw the action, you know, next either we're not pursuing it or if it kind of overlaps with an action in another subcommittee. And then these are kind of secondary fields that we can kind of fill in as we go. Obviously possible funding sources. This is kind of a little redundant for this subcommittee, but we standardized these across all the subcommittees. So you'll be able to look at, as other subcommittees fill out their actions, what funding sources they're looking at. So hopefully that'll help advance conversations with this committee. And then also any cost estimates to implement these actions, we'll hope to help have that filled in. And then just any kind of data requests needed for the action or barriers to implementation. And then these are more administrative if we're assigning any of these actions to members, due dates, comments, if they're completed. And then this is located on the task force website under just the main task force. There's a folder for energy action worksheets and tracking, and you can click this link. It'll either open up in the browser or you can have it open up in the web application. Multiple people can be editing it. And then it also saves, there's a version history. We can go back in time if things get modified. I will note there's also a folder specific to the subcommittee if we want to save files and resources in here as well. I largely suspect this subcommittee is going to be data-driven with, you know, as we start with the existing funding sources, but then we'll identify any new kind of programs or policy initiatives through this. So just wanted to pause there, and I'm happy to go back. I just wanted to hit that at a high level.
Thanks, Michael. It's good to know that that resource is out there, and I want to know if John Sinn's joined us, as well as Isaac Vandenberg. Hey, John. Isaac, we went through some of the kind of, we did a roll call, basically, and then Michael was just talking about the tool that we'll use to track actions. Isaac, I know you and I had a chance to think about this topic broadly as co-chairs of the Incentives and Subsidies Subcommittee. And before we launch into some of the rest of this, do you want to talk a little bit about kind of how you think about these things and any just observations generally before we get going? I cannot hear you. I blame the AirPods. Always it's the AirPods fault. Okay. That works better. I heard you, but you didn't hear me. I can hear you, Isaac.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, sorry to be 5 minutes late there. Thanks, thanks, Penny, for alerting the group. That was on my way. Yeah, I think just sharing a little bit of context, I think that my view on this group is kind of thinking about both the current state of what incentives and rebates or subsidies exist today, and also in the current energy system, and then thinking about which ones need to come into being in the future. And I think it would be interesting to almost take that view. You know, we have a current state, a current energy system that we're needing to optimize and trying to bring down costs for Alaskans. And then there's a future system that we're bringing into creation that has maybe a different set of incentives and a different set of subsidies. And I think it's important just to kind of add that context to this, that, you know, with the governor's ambitious goal that he set, I know it doesn't necessarily bound us to getting 10-cent power to all Alaskans, but I think it is interesting to keep that in mind. We are going to need to think in terms of new structures, new incentives, new subsidies, and the current system that we have, I don't think can be optimized to get there. I think you and several other folks in the group have observed that this is really a transformational exercise. This is not a kind of, you know, improving on the margins, trying to make small changes, like what the governor is asking for us to think really big and think in terms of transformational changes. And one way to do that is to kind of think of this in terms of the current system that we have now, that is in some ways learning how to transition to a new system. And I think it's important to think of that in those terms for this. So one of the points that I think you made, Nils, or that we talked about earlier, was just keeping in mind that the point of this group is to, you know, have Alaskans at the center. We're here to bring down energy costs for all Alaskans, and that's our North Star, keeping the people in the state at the center, and we're trying to do right by the people in the state. And so anything that we do, it should be aimed at that, is how do we bring down the cost of energy, what kind of incentives and subsidies will get us there. And just keep it, I know that's an obvious point, but I just think it's worth a reminder every once in a while, like, we're not trying to, you know, maintain any one piece of infrastructure or any one industry or any one technology, we're looking at how do we bring down costs for Alaskans, and however we get there is what this group is trying to do. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Isaac. That's helpful. I think it kind of goes to our goals, purpose, et cetera. And if, I know we had this conversation at the last task force meeting around kind of what are those priorities. If affordability, if lower cost for Alaskans is kind of our guiding light, then for this subcommittee, we're thinking really specifically about incentives and subsidies that meet that stated purpose of the task force. And there are lots of other ways to use incentives and subsidies to drive clean energy, to advance projects in one region or another, or large or small. But really we're thinking about it very specifically in terms of does it lower costs for Alaskans? And I'll note that one of the things that came up at the last task force meeting is, sure, just give me $500 million and I will lower the cost, right? Which I think is a subsidy, but that's one end of an approach to this question. So that's, I think, for us kind of how we're thinking about it. John, did you want to add to how you're thinking about this purpose or goal?
Yeah, thanks. I think it's also important to consider reliability when we're talking about this, because, we don't want the cheapest solution doesn't necessarily work in every instance. And I think that's something that's really critical for Alaska, is that it has to work. And so that in itself creates some challenges and some cost. So that's an important component. I don't think we can just look through the lens of affordability for Alaskans, because I don't think they'd be satisfied with that.
Right. So there's, a decision-making tree that kind of goes into this. It's not cheap, right, or cheapest. It's more affordable. It's lower cost. But it still has this additional check boxes to consider. And Michael, maybe you can touch on what's the larger purpose that maybe has emerged from your work with the group so far? Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, it was more, well, I have a few things, but more, if I raised my hand just a point of information, because I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. That poll that we sent out on Friday, we have 9 responses so far, so please definitely take it if you haven't responded, but the top 3 trends that we're seeing just from those 9 responses are affordability, reliability, and then kind of a leave no one behind approach, which speaks to kind of the equity and affordability.
That's what we said. Perfect. It's basically just the 3 of us took it 3 times.
But boy, are we aligned.
Right. Yeah. I do think I appreciate that. We're kind of throwing around incentives and subsidies, and Isaac, you mentioned rebate. But I want to spend some time, what do those things mean? And if we can define our terms, and maybe there's other terms we need to bring into it, that would be helpful in terms of next steps or actions. But I guess when because there's squishiness to some extent. A subsidy, I think of as, a state, federal grant or dollar amount to an individual or a business, a resident, that changes their ability to pay. And an incentive, in my mind, is attached to a return, of some sort. But how should we define those terms? And Isaac, you mentioned rebate too, but how would you think about those? And then for the other subcommittee members too, do you think those things are concrete, and how would you define them?
Yeah, we can tuck the rebate term maybe under subsidies to keep this simple, not overcomplicate, and just stick to subsidies and incentives. But I do think about just in general terms, subsidies being something where we're essentially just throwing money at a problem, because we want to accomplish some goal. So a good example of that is like the power cost equalization program is a, I think, a pretty classic subsidy where we're saying we have decided as a state that we want folks in rural Alaska to pay the same cost for their energy as people on the rail belt. And so let's throw money at that problem. And it's essentially subsidize the cost of energy to accomplish that. Whereas incentives, to my view, and I'd love to hear other folks' view on this, is, you know, where we're actually trying to bring about some kind of behavior change. We're setting up some structure where we're saying, let's provide some carrot out there that will bring about some action that we find favorable. So, you know, there's public money and we want to attract private investment. So that's like an incentive. Or we want people to invest some of their own money in, you know, some appliance in their home, and we're going to provide a little bit of money so that they, you know, they invest their own money. And we're trying to incentivize that behavior, trying to kind of change behavior. It's kind of, yeah, in my simpleton view is kind of how I differentiate between those two. But yeah, it'd be good to get a good clear definition here. I see Andrew Guy has a comment there.
Yeah, Andrew, how do you think about those terms? Andrew, you're muted.
I'm sorry. You know, we have a long-standing program in the state that's been around for a long time, ever since the rail belt in the southeast area started energy funding from the state. You know, along with that funding was the PCE program intended to equalize the power for the rest of Alaska, basically rural Alaska. But it's never worked, you know. It's never equalized anything. And it's not doing rural Alaska any good. And I've made that comment before. You know, as a subsidy, it should, first of all, while we're in the situation, it should apply to everything, not just individual houses, you know. Because we have too many people coming into the rail belt area to do their shopping because businesses cannot take advantage of that subsidy.
Right.
They should be part of that subsidy in the current state. So while we're looking at the subsidies, you know, we got to make what's out there now equal to everything, to everybody, to every entity. But then at the same time, the PCE program has, it has a huge corpus. So it can be structured as an incentive too, you know. Sometime in the future, if, the rural project comes online, maybe, using that corpus as a, like a loan, help with a loan.
Yeah, Andrew, let me just
online, you know, that area of the state wouldn't need that PCE. You know, it has to be structured as an incentive that way.
Could it do more? Let me just, so I know you said PCE hasn't worked, but it sounded like as you expanded on that, that it was, so for residents, it's doing its part, or for households, kind of doing its part to equalize or offset some of those
Not even for residents. You know, here in Anchorage area, rail belt, we pay about 15 cents a kilowatt-hour. In my village, with PCE, it's over 55, it's about 55 cents a kilowatt-hour.
So you're not achieving that same tariff.
They equalize that kilowatt-hour payment.
Okay, so that's one piece of it. And then for, it's also not applicable to schools, businesses, you know, anything beyond a resident. So that's kind of for this very large subsidy program. There are some inefficiencies or things that aren't being achieved in your mind. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. Great. Michael?
Yeah, thanks. Just one point of information. I think we will start to get access to that data. I think it's available community by community. We can you know, look at that through kind of a data-driven, point of view to help examine that. The other thing I would kind of emphasize, too, is there's going to be kind of statewide strategies and actions we can identify, but then we know they may need to be customized by region. And just an example of that with this has come up on the statutes and regulations subcommittee with all of the federal competitive grants coming online. One of the challenges for some local communities, especially in the rural area, is that cost share match. So I think we heard some policy perspectives from APA. They spoke at that subcommittee about the need for, potentially a state match to help with that local cost share, creating legislation for that. The other thing with the different competitive federal funding with the White House Justice 40 initiative, we know that they're looking at kind of prioritizing or creating different evaluation criteria for disadvantaged communities. Different federal agencies are evaluating that differently. So just something to keep in mind as we look at this. You may have to create different strategies based on the regions.
Yeah, for sure. John, you had your hand up, and I also wanted to, for this discussion, subsidy is, a government putting funds out there and offsetting costs. An incentive could be that, or it could be a government foregoing revenue in some way. And so you can look at like tax rebates or tax type incentives that fall within our remit. I think one of the questions I've had is how should we think about a grant? Is a grant an incentive or a subsidy? And does it matter when it's 50-50 or 80-20 or 20-80 in terms of cost share? So I'll throw that out there too, but John, maybe you had another topic you wanted to have.
Yeah, I was just going to make a comment that I think it's worth the discussion to talk about whether or not we want corporations or business to have subsidies. I think that's probably a tough discussion depending on the region, but there's a significant cost for subsidizing business in locations versus subsidizing residents. And maybe there's not a different path we can take to incentivize the businesses or provide grants to those businesses as opposed to subsidization. I think there's a big discussion we should be having along those lines, because I wouldn't just assume, and I don't think we should assume, that we should just subsidize
everybody. Right. Or as we do, there's reasons why we do it, right? We have to understand what the why. Karen?
Yeah, so I think I wanted to agree with Isaac's construct broadly. Like, I look at a subsidy as a direct payment, and that's either something like the PCE or a grant. The incentives should be looked at, in my opinion, as if you do X, you will get Y, right? I think that's a very simple way of dividing the two up.
Great. Thanks. Duff, did you want to weigh in? And welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and sorry I was a little bit late. I was tied up. I agree with Jake's just last response. If you're going to either get a subsidy or grant, or a subsidy or an incentive, what is the public interest and value thereof? I would not disagree with John, but I would share that if you're attracting private investment into a village to invest in a solar and you incentivize and you're subsidizing a private business, you're still creating a public good if you're lowering the cost of power. And so I want to be careful of, eliminating or not. I think there's a role for private business. I think there's needed corporations that would invest in their communities if there was a segue through the RCA for them to participate rather than it just being a utility-centric. This is kind of falls into the reform area. But sticking with the subsidy and incentive, just the terms itself, I think Nick kind of hit it on the head. I would also just temper that there's a difference between internal state subsidies, incentives, and what we could be asking for at the federal level. And there is a difference because it's a different pot of money. And we should be ambitious and aggressive to saying, look, we are third world in many cases as energy. And I think we need to be creating that messaging that we need some help that's going to come beyond our coffers out of Juneau. And so I just want to temper that bigger picture in that incentives versus subsidy, or in, not versus, but subsidy and incentive. You know, and I don't want to get into the weeds of these subsidies and incentives, but I heard Andrew. I mean, I think there should be some forward funding where you can borrow from the PCE to lower your cost, to get a cost share for a grant or something. I mean, there's all kinds of creative things that this committee can work on that's beyond just a pure grant and a pure, you know, incentive. But I want to save those comments for later. But going back to the terms and the terms issue as put forward, I think I've really clear that we should have a very succinct difference between subsidy and incentive.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Doug. Nick, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I just want to mention, I'm not sure if it's been discussed yet, but it sounds maybe a little bit better, the concept of tax increment financing. And, you know, the reason is because, you know, that typically is governed by the definition of public benefits. So there are a number of states, Montana being one of them, Chicago did it, Milwaukee did it, where they actually were able to use tax increment financing for sustainability, but also for, you know, energy projects. I don't know, that's one of the other, you know, tools in the arsenal, perhaps. I don't know if that's, you know, currently on the dock or not, but maybe.
Well, it's different than an incentive and subsidy, right? To some extent, it's a financing mechanism, which is like should be like within our scope, but maybe we haven't fleshed out what those look like yet. So it's a good point. So that's helpful. And I think if we can keep those things in mind and we can write up kind of what that looks like so we can understand it as we go forward in terms of where our solutions or actions kind of fall under, I think that's a good thing. The other, Isaac, you mentioned, you know, where we're at today versus where we're headed. And if we're solving affordability under today's construct, you know, I think the comment about just give me $500 million and I'll, you know, that fixes it is valid. Or are we imagining a different future that is, you know, has a different energy portfolio? Is it a clean energy future and so on? And I think we have to think about subsidies and incentives to meet both of those, kind of the timeliness of where we're at or those scenarios. So what are incentives and subsidies that address the needs of today? What are incentives and subsidies that manage a transition toward lower cost energy and toward meeting the governor's goal? And, you know, but for the long term, what is a statewide approach and what are the funding constructs needed to maintain that?
Further sharpen that point there. I think there's a whole set of, you know, incentives with things like, you know, rate design within utilities and, you know, accessing some of the app-enabled appliances in people's homes to provide services back to the grid and time of use charging for electric vehicles. There's all of these things that, you know, exist in other places that we simply don't have access to here in the current system. And so I do feel like one of the challenges of this group is like thinking through, you know, if the regulatory framework that we had in the state was different, what other incentives and subsidies could we start tapping into to make some real headway? But you actually can't tap into a lot of those incentives and kind of creative ways of, you know, consuming and distributing and using energy because we just don't have the regulatory framework. So we kind of have to both look at the current system, the current regulatory framework, and also think about, okay, if we were actually being transformational here and thinking about a new state, what incentives are we seeing in other parts of the world or other places that we could use her if we had the right regulatory structures to allow for those. And so we kind of have to think in both worlds, like the world we're currently in and also the world that we might be able to get to if we had a simultaneous regulatory change. So
can you elaborate a little bit more? What is different in other locations that allow them to do things that we can't?
Yeah, I mean, I think things like looking at tapping into people's app-enabled appliances in their homes to do things like demand-side management and actually compensate individual residential customers for, you know, starting their dryer a couple seconds later or, having the battery off of their electric vehicle actually provide services back to the grid and be compensated for that, or actually having different price structures for when they draw from the grid to power different parts of their home. These are all things as we think about, you know, trying to get to lower costs. We just can't do those. There's no regulatory framework to allow that kind of a relationship to exist between the kind of residential customers and utilities.
And some of that ancillary infrastructure, right? Like the broadband build out that's necessary to, you know, an Internet of Things type thing approach. So I think it's helpful to keep those things in mind. And there's probably an economy of scale too, where there's, you know, a larger urban infrastructure might have more of those elements and we're thinking differently. I know Michael mentioned earlier, like we might be thinking statewide, we might be thinking regionally, maybe, you know, from this longitudinal aspect too, kind of where are we going to be at 25 years and what do we solve for 10? What do we solve for there? Michael, did you want to add something? I'll turn to Garrett and Duff.
Yeah, you kind of took the words from my mouth. The previous meeting on Borough, we were talking about the economy scales and scope and, you know, the benefits of bundling multiple different types of projects, whether it's, you know, transportation, broadband, and energy into one project and get those secondary benefits. So that's something that can be incentivized. And then I also just had a quick question for the group. You know, I wasn't present 2 task force meetings ago, but I did listen to it. I know at one point they were questioning the title of the subcommittee. You know, it's incentives and subsidies, but should it also have financing in the title? And just as long as we're defining the scope, just wanted to throw that out there.
I mean, it sounds like financing's definitely come up already. I would throw out investments. I'm worried that, you know, to some extent we're thinking about incentives and subsidies as like, what can the state do? And Isaac, to your point, there's things that ratepayers and utilities can do that aren't necessarily the same things, but are responsive. There's other types of, local, government and other types of, infrastructure out there. I think from an investment perspective, that's in programmatic investments. You know, is it, within AHFC or with the state agency or others, who can help with some that transition toward lower costs at the household or community level. And then there's investments, which I mean, to some extent, you know, grants might look like into projects that might be tied back to incentives and subsidies. But it's a fairly expansive in terms of the group title of what we could be and should be looking at, I think. But it's all the financial constructs that help get us to lower cost energy. Garrett and Don?
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to offer my 2 cents on Don's question. In terms of the regulatory environment, I think we probably deal with one of the hardest ones in the country because we're Alaska. And every time there's a major energy project or a major resource development project, you got to go through NEPA, you got to get an EIS, you got to get a 404 permit, and then you're going to get the crap suit out of you. You know, 7 ways from Sunday, which just makes it immeasurably harder to get anything done up here a lot of the times. I don't know if there's anything we can do about that in this little subcommittee here, but
my opinion. So from a a large project permitting and getting something built. Is that where you're coming from?
Yeah, and it, you know, when you're looking at getting one of these large projects built in a rural area that might need a lot of power and create this anchor tenant we were just discussing in the prior subcommittee,
mm-hmm.
and then you can spread that out to the villages in the area, it's just, it's so much harder to do here.
Yeah, but I hear that a lot. and I think that's more of an excuse really than the real issue. And the real issue is the ability to spread those costs. Yes, it's a higher cost for those projects, no doubt about it, because of those issues. But ultimately it comes down to demand, and we don't have the volume required to spread those costs around. That is the main issue with the state of Alaska. And you know, we do projects all the time. We deal with a lot of those permitting issues, and it's more expensive. But because we're in Anchorage and Homer and the Valley, we're able to do some of those things. The rural communities don't have that same demand, and that's the challenge. So the regulatory piece, I think we can get creative on and come up with solutions for that pretty easily with this group, with the support of the governor and those that are participating. But I don't know if that's our biggest issue.
So, John, from your perspective, I mean, the cost of projects is really the nail in the coffin, right?
The combination of, you know, the project cost and spreading that out amongst the users.
Yeah.
And that's the issue.
And if we solve for that, then the regulatory piece would still be hard, but it would be easier to get through because you knew on the other side that you would have something that worked.
Exactly. And it's not, you know, you look at those high project costs and can determine very quickly because of the users on the other side that it's not worth it. That is the issue with the pipeline coming down from the North Slope. There has to be a certain amount of volume going through that pipeline in order to make it economic. The same challenges that Donlin's having, for example, with the cost of fuel. It's challenging.
Yeah. And Garrett, I imagine that, you know, to some extent those regulatory barriers add to cost, which makes it even harder to pencil that. So there's a little bit of a two-way street there.
Exactly. So I fully take your point there, John. I agree with you. You know, if you take broadband as an analogy here, that's why it's been so slow, because it's never been profitable to spend tens of millions of dollars to drop a fiber line to 300 customers, right? So completely on board with it.
Yeah. Doc, and then Nick, and then probably Michael will want us to, like, list some actions or something. So we're going to get through a quick round of comments and see what we've got. Doc?
Yeah. Look, there's things, I mean, we talk about outside federal regulatory. There's a lot of things we can do state internal regulatory. I mean, our RCA is not bound by FERC rules. There's a lot of open access rules. There's a lot of level playing field rules that we don't necessarily go by. So us, Hawaii, and Ericotta, Texas, because we don't have interstate trade, we do not fall in with some of FERC's rules. And I'm not saying FERC is good. I'm just saying there's a different level of playing field when you're bringing a project on that is economic, but yet you're being blocked by either an interconnection or other things. The other thing that we have is it falls into incentives and subsidies from a legislative point of view. For instance, how do we rank with net metering? Oh, by the way, do we have commercial net metering? So if an Arctic village wanted to invest $2 million in a solar, how are they going to integrate that into lowering the cost of their local community and be able to function with that local utility that's going to say, hey, I really don't want you jumping into my trough here because, you know, that's going to displace my diesel and I got high costs. And we're open up. If we're going to be we're opening up areas that need to be discussed. They may not be comfortable with certain parties. But in fact, there is a paradigm here that if we want to be transformative, there are some areas that we could do some hard look at internally as well, as far as changing the dynamics in this regulatory process that impacts the incentives and subsidies.
Yeah.
So just want to share that.
Nick, and then Isaac?
Just actually, you know, two things. One is the notion of energy storage as a way to, and basically, you know, some way of financing greater energy storage that can, you know, potentially address those economies of scale. It also would improve the ability to, you know, reduce energy usage and dependency on the grid or any other resources, as well as the swings, you know, in pricing of energy. So I wonder if that's something that could be considered as a feasible option. The second thing, which is not related, but is sort of interesting, is that the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and you probably are very familiar with that, all of you, also offers, you know, subsidies and, you know, incentives to, you know, reduce energy usage. So the less you use, obviously, the less, you know, vulnerable you are, and, you know, these things could be potentially combined, as a way to, make the energy use both smarter and lower.
Great. Thanks. Isaac?
Yeah, I was just going to, highlight the point that John made earlier, which is a lot of the projects that we've had in the state in the past just don't pencil out because there's just not a large enough market or demand for those projects, or just the project costs are just too high to even get them out of the starting gate. It seems like one of the roles that this subcommittee, or one of the services we can provide to the larger task force, is just looking at, you know, a survey of all the incentives and subsidies and rebates, using that word, that currently exist that are underpinning our current way of life, also looking at what other incentives or rebates are out there that may be helpful to the state, and thinking about it also in terms of some of the technologies that we think are coming down the pike that could be disruptive, and are there, you know, can we inform the group as to what kind of incentives and subsidies are available that may make some projects start to pencil out or may make it so that new industries can flourish here that haven't in the past. Don't mean to be rose-colored glasses about this. You know, I know how hard it is to get projects that are investable, even with some of the incentives rebates available. But I think if we look at what currently exists, and then also some of the things that are opportunities for us in the state, if we wanted to pursue them, that would be helpful for the group, just to get real clarity on what's available out there. Like, what could we be taking advantage of the states that we aren't currently?
Yeah, it looks like John's volunteering to gather that list. John, is that
exactly what I was going to land?
You've got your hand up.
No, it's a great idea to look at what currently is being done from an incentive and subsidization perspective. You know, one of the bigger challenges that we have with the timeline that the governor put out there, and you know, there's been a lot of discussion on the RPS legislation for South Central and essentially putting, you know, penalties in there for the co-ops for not switching over, you know, to different types of renewable projects. One of the biggest challenges that I think we have with this initiative is the fact that there are recently built power generation here along the rail belt that is nowhere near fully depreciated. And so that's from the electric perspective. We have something new. Now we've got additional cost on there, right? So there's been the idea, well, what if we just pay down the debt for all these, you know, entities? And then you could start anew, which is, you know, I definitely wouldn't recommend that. But just there's some challenges out there with these new projects that come along because of what's on the books already for these entities. That's one of the bigger challenges that we have here in trying to reduce the cost of energy, at least along the rail belt. That's the biggest hurdle.
Yeah. Which goes back to kind of our timing issues, right? Like,
yeah,
for this current system, we've got some locked or fixed or costs, or it's sunk, right, is the term. So something to deal with. Come back. Isaac, you don't still have your hand up, right? So go to Garrett, and then we'll wrap up over the next 10 minutes with some action items. Garrett?
Yeah, thanks. I just kind of want to, again, agree with Isaac. I've been trying to figure out a way to do exactly that for months. So you find a contractor who has both the knowledge and ability to look at all the currently existing programs, what was new in the IIJA, what was new in the IRA, map out how production tax credits work, map out how the incentive tax credits work, or investment tax credits work, excuse me, and then model that, and how do all those programs work, and which ones can you access if you're a municipality, if you're a tribe, if you're a co-op, if you're an AMC. And we just have this very nice on-the-shelf product that we can then hand out to Alaskans and say, hey, here's a roadmap to go get money, because I think that's the big hang-up right now. There's all this crap out there that it's just confusing and overwhelming, and a lot of communities don't have the capacity to do it.
Yeah. But first, I mean, we've got a contact run, so thanks to Michael Baker for signing up for this. And then also, why is your spreadsheet blank, Michael? We've been saying stuff the whole time. I think this data piece for this subcommittee in particular is really important. What's currently out there, Garrett, from your perspective at the federal level, including, you know, especially things that have been rolled out from IJA, IRA, every new bill seems to have something new attached to it. Like, and if AEA has something great, I don't know if it's as extensive as we need, but thanks, Karen. And I should call him Karen. But I think also, you know, what does it look like at the state level? And I don't know that the presentations I've seen so far have really covered it specifically, which agencies are doing what, and really broken down. Really, we're looking at what are financial mechanism, matrix, that we can look at. And it's not just identifying what they are, but it's also kind of what's being used right now, and for the things that aren't being used, why, and how do we overcome those barriers? And I think those would be really interesting actions that we could pick up, because we could have some role, and if there's something currently not being leveraged, what could we do to help Alaskans leverage that differently? And then somebody mentioned debt, mostly in terms of current debt, but I would add that to, like, is there a debt or bonding or other types of structures that the state or others could and should be considering as part of, you know, their funding and financial mechanisms to add to our list for this subcommittee? Michael, what else do you got?
Oh, just I wanted to raise my hand, and my colleague Mark is, I believe, sharing his screen, if not his card. They kind of updated the action.
He's been keeping track, and got it.
So that, I just wanted to clarify, too, the last one. You know, I loved all the comments so far. That kind of comprehensive tracking, you know, I've also heard it, you know, discussed as kind of mapping as, you know, all the opportunities. So another way to think of it is could be like a toolkit or a decision support tool for, you know, local communities or even regions. I just wanted to understand, you know, as we fill out the action description, the real intent of that.
Yeah. I think it sounds, I mean, the intent is to leverage or utilize, you know, any or all of those, or create new. I don't think we want to create duplicative mechanisms within this group, so we want to make sure that we've got a good picture of what's there, and then if there are gaps, you know, we can identify that within this group, and if there's things that aren't being used, then we can, you know, work on ways to utilize those better or differently. That's my sense. It's probably a
product. Can I just challenge? I'd call it a roadmap or a guidebook, right? It's something that is easily digestible for Alaskans that they can download from AEA's website and say, oh, look, here's all the programs that are available. Here's the tax credits that are available. Maybe we include some, you know, suggestions of where they go find investors for projects. Like, everything that is boiled down and distilled into something that's easier to digest than 75 different 500-page long notes coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've got to wrap up here shortly. Andrew and Doc, and then I'll turn it back to you, Mark or Michael, to help us wrap up. Andrew?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. considering the overarching goal of the main committee, you know, I think we should add an item that incentivizes and or subsidizes the extension of the existing grid. You know, especially if the extension will really support and strengthen the existing grid.
Right. So what are those investments, and probably state-led or otherwise, investments that could lead towards some of the transitional growth or make a difference that we've talked about? Doug?
Yeah, I want to tailhook on what Garrett had just mentioned. Not only do we need a roadmap, but we need to have a follow-on where, let's say, you're a rural community that gets an AEA renewable energy fund.
Yeah.
And now you're trying to find the match. We need to have somebody that can help with the secret decoder ring, because not everybody is sophisticated. I mean, I can go out and hire a tax attorney for $800 an hour, but a small community might not have those resources to do so. And so that's important. So that's one thing, is a follow-on from the roadmap idea of a call or somebody that they can reach out that helps them with the secret decoder ring. The other factor on that is stackability. And that is a term that I learned through the USDA. There are so many of these programs out there that are stackable, and then there's ones that are non-stackable. And so that's really important, too, because if you get a pot of money from X, some say that's the only money you can use. You can't use any other money unless you pull it out of your pocket. But other ones say, hey, the water's warm. Come get, you know, pull from anything. So I'm just talking about layers on that roadmap and that guidebook that Garrett's talking about. But I think it can be more deeper than just, a list of what's available. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. And Michael, Mark, I know there's a couple of resources being shared in the chat as well. Karen?
All right. So I think one thing that would be smart for us to also look at are the gaps in incentives and subsidies. That's one thing I have found currently, is that no other federal agency wants to touch diesel generation, which is probably like the biggest need in villages and will continue to be that way for a long period of time. So if we can find gaps and recommend solutions to the legislature, be it state or federal, I think that'd be a good thing to include.
Because if all the incentives and subsidies are to move away from diesel, then supporting existing diesel systems and lowering costs in those communities, you know, that's not going to be helpful. So is that the kind of gap that's what you're talking about?
Especially
in the short term?
Yeah, I mean, we do, you know, tower household fuel work, as everyone's familiar with, and there's, you know, billion-plus dollar maintenance backlog for those things. Nobody else is doing that besides the Downey Commission and the AEA. So we're never, ever going to fix that problem without additional help. And when there's that big of a need, people are so busy fighting to protect what they have, they can't really look down the road and chase new grants for other things, like, it's hard to add wind and solar to a powerhouse that's falling apart, I guess, at that point.
And probably you shouldn't. Jeff, I see your hand up, but also I was supposed to get you in the next 2 minutes to a next meeting time and actions or roles for each of us and so on. We don't have anything currently planned for our next meeting, but is that right, Michael, or did we set up this to be a recurring meeting?
So, yeah, it would be good to kind of set up a meeting before the next task force meeting to kind of solidify this list. And then, yeah, we'll go in and kind of refine this and post it for everyone to go in and comment and help fill in the fields as appropriate. But I think it would be good just to meet one more time before the next task force meeting.
Yeah, when is that?
That is on the 8th. And if we can't find a time that works, we can at least, you know, coordinate offline through this worksheet.
Yeah. Garrett, I know you're out for a bit, right?
Yeah. I'm going to be out for 2 weeks in August to deal with some family issues, so I don't know if I'll make that task force meeting.
I mean, I would love to spend every day on all these topics for the next week. Isaac, you're also out on these. Should we, maybe they can share with us the spreadsheet, we can reflect and come back next Monday or something, or what works for you?
That sounds good. Yeah, I was also going to suggest, I wonder how folks feel about an early morning meetings to deconflict from your existing work commitments. 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. work for me, but I don't know how other people feel about that. Because I think that could open up a lot of calendars if you just met before work in the morning.
Yeah.
And if we do that, pretty much any day next week works for me.
Yeah, you don't get a vote. You do, but...
I just be mindful, we do have another subcommittee meeting now, so...
Okay. Well, if you want to get these notes out to us, Michael, we can confer and come back with some proposed times. And thanks, everybody, all the subcommittee and others and all of our supporting folks for joining us for this call. I think it's good kind of brainstorming for now, storming, and we've got definitely some work in front of us. So I appreciate everybody's time today.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thanks. Thanks.